Hi, I'm Kathy Forstey, music director, KC Cafe Radio. It's a great pleasure to spend some time chatting with one of Kansas City's favorite singer-songwriters, Joy Zimmerman. Joy's album, Say My Name, has been a favorite on KC Cafe Radio for the last several months. Joy's powerful voice and inventive songwriting takes the listener on a journey through gratitude, regret, hope, and survival. A variety of song styles make her not only a unique artist, but someone you can't wait to hear more from. Joy, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me today here on KC Cafe Radio.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I noticed that Say My Name is like your fourth album in the last 5 years.
True.
So, have you had a cachet of songs stored up that you just needed to get recorded and out there? Or are these songs that you kind of write as you do the albums?
I had a little bit of a stockpile, but generally I'm new to this songwriting. So it's kind of been as I go. So I had a bunch of songs that were ready for Say My Name and just decided to do that. So, yeah, it's kind of opened the door to songwriting once I got started.
And how would you say that this album is different from your other four that you've released since, what, 2013?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the first three I did in Nashville, and I met an independent producer named Fat at Azalea Studios, and that was a great way to get started on recording and learning about the whole process. We'd done some home recordings, but, you know, this was obviously a whole different deal. And so he was the producer, and went down there, and he hired session musicians and for those three albums. We did the first one in 2013, and then two more basically at the same time. And one is sort of eclectic singer-songwriter. That one's called Gray Matter. And the other one, Mosaic, was sort of more of a spiritual collection of CDs, but we did those at the same time. So anyway, that was a great experience in Nashville to get to do that and again, learn more about the process. And then when we had enough songs to do Say My Name, decided we would do that here in Kansas City, because obviously there are tons of great musicians here, and I'd been working really closely by that time with Jimmy Dykes, who I'm in a duo with, and he's just kind of a guitar wizard. and so invited him to co-produce Say My Name with me, and we did it at a local studio here, Weights and Measures, with Dwayne Trower. I was just super impressed with him. So we did that here in Kansas City. So, and being co-producer was a really fun experience to do that with Jimmy too. So that's in a way how that differed. I mean, musicians that we knew here in town.
Mm-hmm. So what's the difference between recording in Nashville and recording in Kansas City? What's some of the biggest differences, I guess, other than location?
Well, I would say, you know, something that's not different in a lot of ways is the caliber of the musicians. We just have some of the finest, obviously, here in Kansas City. So that's a cool thing. I think, you know, there are just so many studios in Nashville. So I guess you just have a huge wide range of choice in Nashville. But the fact, I think for me, again, the biggest difference was that I wasn't co-producing it in Nashville, and I was there to learn. So I felt like so much more of a beginner there. So that colored my experience of it. I think in Nashville too, I mean, these guys, and I just say guys because they were pretty much, I guess they were all men that worked on the CD. They, you know, were very seasoned and obviously would come in and could, you know, throw on their track in a short amount of time. We did the core group, the core band for most of it, but the guys that did the extra tracks, you know, they would go to one studio and then travel to another studio and another one in a day and lay down tracks. So I guess a difference is that those folks are, you know, that's their sole job is doing session work. And the guys that we hired do gigs a lot around the town, more so than I think those guys in Nashville, I guess. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To me, it'd be kind of scary to give my songs to somebody I don't know and let them, you know, work it, you know, even though I don't know them. I don't know. To me, that'd be a little bit scary.
Yeah, well, it was actually worked really, really well, because we met this guy, Fat, at Taxi, the conference in Los Angeles, and really liked him and his wife. She's a singer-songwriter, and had a lot of conversations before we started about what, you know, what our philosophy was, and talked a lot about how we wanted the songs produced. And so it was a joint process. We just didn't know as much. I didn't know as much going into it. So there was a lot of trust, but it also, saying that, it was also really fun to take them on ourselves and do that with Say My Name.
How did you decide to produce this? I mean, were you like, had the mindset of, I want a wall of sound kind of sound, or did you want to keep it minimalist? What kind of mindset did you go into in producing it?
Well, I think, you know, because I do such eclectic songs. And so I think what I usually start with is just the individual song and say, what would serve this song best? And just kind of go from there and then hope they kind of hang together. Because one of the most difficult things at the end, since it's so eclectic, is trying to figure out the right order. But kind of starting with, yeah, with each song, Jimmy and I sat down and played through each one and you know, started from there. And we had been playing some of them out, you know, and at gigs, and so kind of had a sense of the sound. So we had kind of a roadmap before we recorded of who we wanted to do what. But then when you get in there, it's such a fabulous process because different people hear different things. And Duane, you know, the engineer, was great, offering his insight too. So that's one of the most fun processes, I think, is seeing your song come to life in ways that you can't necessarily anticipate, you know, before you start, which is why it's so fun.
What point in your life did you start songwriting? It's not a like something you've been doing for a long time, right?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. The sort of music in general began when I was 5 and I started playing violin, the Suzuki method, if you're familiar with that. Mm-hmm. So started that before kindergarten and then just played classical violin all the way through college and beyond, and didn't have really a vision for violin other than in my music, other than classical. So played, you know, in church and at weddings and funerals, and just knew that I always kind of had this debate between social work and music, and eventually social work won out in terms of studying. I was a music minor, but anyway, so music was always on the back burner of the violin, and it wasn't until my son was taking guitar lessons, actually from Jimmy Dykes, the guy that I played a duo with. And I was sitting outside his lesson, and I thought, wow, I really wish, I was thinking in my next life, I would love to play guitar. I wish I had done that. And that was probably 9 or 10 years ago. And so I think I talked to Jimmy that day and said, hey, you know, could you add me to your list of lessons? And so started in on it then. And, you know, of course, it's really difficult, as you know, guitar teacher and starting when you're older. It was a challenge. But the cool thing was that once I started playing chords, then in a way I couldn't when I was playing violin with just the single melody line, I heard my own melodies over those chords. And so then I joined this little folk trio and was having a great time and started to perform and then experience the violin in a different way with some of those songs. We would kind of redo those songs and use the violin. Then decided I would kind of challenge myself to try my hand at songwriting. And then it just was kind of crazy because it sort of came much more naturally than I thought it would. It's just something that I had never really tried. But it turns out when you're older, you have a lot to say. You've been through a lot, you know? And so it was kind of this, all of a sudden I thought, hey, this is really something I'm supposed to be doing. Because not that it's not difficult, but just that it gave me such delight and satisfaction to put these words with this melody. And so anyway, in other words, just, yeah, within the last, you know, probably 7, 8 years.
Were you like a poetry writer before that? Or was it songwriting just something that came with the music?
I would say it came with the music. I did do, you know, a fair amount of writing, but it was, you know, more sort of kind of journal essay kind of writing, not necessarily poetry, which is, I think, more akin, I don't know what you think, but it's more akin to songwriting is poetry, I think, in a way.
So what songwriters were you listening to growing up?
Wow, a wide range. But I think probably I remember the first really strong impact was Carole King and Tapestry and James Taylor, just sort of that era. But I had kind of, I think, sort of an interesting childhood because we went to church in the inner core of St. Louis, and then I had a very diverse kind of high school experience. I was listening to all kinds of different music from, you know, like Earth, Wind & Fire, Beatles, Nirvana. I mean, just The Clash, you know, just all kinds of stuff. But in terms of songwriting, I think it would be people like Carole King and James Taylor. Love Sting, his creativity, Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah, we both kind of grew up in the St. Louis, on St. Louis radio, I think.
Yeah. Yeah,
so like listening to KC95 and some of those stations. So there was such great variety, I thought, on the radio in St. Louis back when I think we're around the same age. So You know, so it was really cool. You could hear Led Zeppelin and then followed by Helen Reddy or something, you know, on the radio. Yes. So I think that's why we have such this big variety of music that we love and we like to listen to. It kind of inspires us and influences us as musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the radio we listened to as a kid.
Yeah. Great point.
Do you come from a musical family? Or anybody else in your family play music?
Yeah. I would say kind of half and half. My dad, not so much musical at all, but my mom played piano, and my grandma was an organist, and folks really like to sing, and mom put a big premium on us learning music, and so we each got one instrument, and she took us to those lessons faithfully, and so I was the oldest, and she was thinking at first I would play piano, and I ended up with a violin by choice, so so music was highly valued, sang in choirs and things too, and mm-hmm. you know, good harmony, I think that's a gift to get to hear, you know, four chord harmony when you're a kid and kind of have that embedded in you too.
Yeah, that's great. So why did you choose violin?
You know, I don't know. It was one of my dad's colleague's wife who had a Suzuki and piano studio and violin and piano. And so went to go hear that one day. And my mom and I were talking to the teacher afterwards and said, well, when do you want to start piano? And I kept saying, well, I'd like to start violin. And this little 5-year-old. And I don't know what it was about that. You know, I think I just love that clear, beautiful tone of the violin. I also wish I played piano, you know, for sure. But there was just something about the violin that captured me. And I did love playing in orchestras a lot. That was a great part of my childhood, too. Got rock inside, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that you have to have all sides there. You know, the thing I think about, like, violin and guitar, that they're just really personal instruments because you hold them against your body. And, like, without, like, piano, you're not holding it, you're hitting it. Or with violin, you're holding it in your hands and you're holding it under your chin or you're holding it against your body to play. Same thing with guitar. So I find that those instruments are such personal instruments and they become a part of you as a musician when you're playing. That's what attracted me to playing guitar.
That's a beautiful point. I never thought of that. I was just thinking too about, and I hadn't really sung solo ever until the last 7 or 8 years when I was writing my own songs and just thought that my voice blended well with other people, and that was kind of my job to provide harmony or just blend. And so it wasn't until I sang solo, but what reminded me of that with the violin too is thinking, well, you know, I already had to work on phrasing and how you would sing a certain line, how you would play a certain line. So it's sort of like the human voice too, and maybe that attracted me to that, and it maybe that kind of led to a little bit easier time singing in a way too, having played the violin.
And violin, is that sort of like in your register as well as a singer?
Yeah, I would say, isn't that interesting? Yeah, and just the first position, yeah, the lowest note, the G, is probably my lowest note.
Mm-hmm.
All the way up to the G on the E string. So yeah, that's fascinating. There you go.
I'm glad I could give you some insight into yourself.
Thank you. This is free.
Exactly. I'll send you the bill later. So.
Excellent.
So when you write, do you usually write on the guitar, or have you ever written on with the violin?
Just a little bit with the violin. And sometimes I write separate from either one of them, too. Sometimes more the hook will come to me. Just a free-floating melody sometimes with a lyric or an idea for the song will come first. And then I'll go to the guitar. But in a way, since I was learning to write songs while I was learning guitar, well, I'm still learning guitar for sure. It's a lifelong pursuit, eh? But I would try to do something different with each song. So if I would learn, you know, a new rhythm pattern or a new chord or whatever, I would try to throw that in. So in a way, being intentional about diversity, I would say more often it is on the guitar that I write.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when you write, do you schedule time to write, or is it something that you wait for inspiration to hit you and then you write, or do you try to write every day?
Boy, I wish I could say I would try to write every day. Eventually, that would be a great practice to have. But kind of the way life has been most recently, it's sort of where inspiration hits me. you know, and I'll just, as maybe most writers do, have little notes here and there and receipts and, you know, all that stuff and have boxes of little notes. But sometimes I'll intentionally sit down and say, let me see if I can pull some of this together. But usually it works best when the inspiration hits me and I have a concentrated block of time and I'll just sit there and kind of slog it out and try to get it down. But it seems like each one comes so differently. Sometimes they're so easy, right? And they just like slide out. And other times, you know, you have to revisit and revisit and it takes a couple of years even to really figure it out.
Right. Yeah, I've had songs where I've had a title and then it takes me years to figure out what does that title mean, you know?
Yeah.
And then I don't know, something will happen in life and I'm like, that's what that song's for, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So songs kind of take their time in coming sometimes, I think.
Yeah, it's like you're almost not maybe ready for it or you don't haven't fully realized, yeah, what that song is about or what it could mean.
So how do you know when a song is finished?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I think at the very beginning when I started, like, I would finish a song in quotes and thought that was it, especially when they arrived so quickly. And I kind of had this idea like a lightning bolt, like that's it. And then I've gone to some songwriting workshops and one person was saying, yeah, you know, you just need to kind of revise and not have the sense that they're done too soon. And I thought, huh, I need to kind of check myself on that. And then I went back and thought I do need to work on some of these a little bit more, even if the bulk of it comes fully formed, there are some things to tweak. So there have been a few times when I've, you know, gone back and even when it's been recorded and redoing it or just adding, you know, another verse or whatever. So now I'm not quite as quick to proclaim them done.
I think most songs are always a work in progress, especially if you're performing them a lot. Sometimes you change the phrasing in it or you might change one word here and there. I think songs are a living, breathing thing that we kind of, they become a part of who we are as a person and they evolve with us sometimes.
Yeah. That's why it's tricky sometimes to actually make that call and say, okay, this is ready to record, because then you have a version of it.
Right.
That's there and that isn't necessarily what you end up with sometimes when you're performing. But at the same time, that's just what it is, right? It's just part of the process, the evolution of a song or an album.
So you mentioned your son earlier doing guitar. How were you able to manage being a mom and also being a musician?
That's also a good question. I think for a long time, I don't know if this is an issue for other moms, but it might be where you kind of sublimate some of your interests, you know, and it's just a lot to manage, you know, everything else that's involved with being a mom and your work and all that. And so I think I didn't pay enough attention to my creative side. And at this point, I was just playing when my kids were really small, just a little bit of violin on the side and singing a little bit here and there. But it hasn't been until they've gotten much older that I've been able to kind of dive into this more full time. So I don't know that much about balancing this when they're really little because I didn't really do that then. But now I get just a lot of delight of having them see me as a really creative, inventive person in the world. And so I like that example that I'm setting now. And it's really nice to have that on my front burner, too, that's really an important role model. And it's also, I think it makes me a better person, a better mom.
Most definitely, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Are your kids musical?
Yeah, definitely. My oldest son just graduated with a music major, and so he is just, as of like a couple weeks ago, trying it, you know, full time to be a musician in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul. And younger son is at drums and sings, and so just got selected for the top choir at his high school. So yeah, so it's fun to share.
That's great. With them. So it's genetic.
Yeah. my younger son was adopted, so it's also
osmosis. Then there it is, osmosis. Then
exactly.
like my kid, yeah. So being so busy, do you play gigs mostly here in Kansas City, or do you venture out sometimes and do gigs in other places?
Venture out sometimes, but the majority are here in town. Just kind of a variety of places here in town, and now every Saturday night at the Intercontinental Hotel here in Kansas City. And around that, just a bunch of other places, including farmers markets and other hotels and house concerts. Love doing those.
Jimmy Dykes usually plays with you on these shows?
Yeah, mostly I would say. Sometimes we do bands, have a full band, like the Plaza has their outside music series and all. But Jimmy and I do duos, probably more the house concerts are either me solo or he and I duo. He's just one of my favorite guitarists on the planet, so I get to see firsthand him work his magic.
Mm-hmm.
we play. It's just crazy fun.
So what do you feel about his style that adds to your music?
He seriously is, I mean, I would say he's a guitar genius, and he is able to play really every style there is. He used to play with Alita Adams for about 17 years and travel the globe with her. So he, and because he teaches too, you know, as you do, he just, you know, learns all kinds of styles, but he can play everything from jazz to, he's in a reggae band. I mean, he plays on all kinds of stuff. So he can, I've learned a lot about rhythm and just, you know, setting the groove. So mostly I'll play rhythm, you know, and then he'll just go off and do his thing. So I just learned from his inventiveness, because he rarely plays the same thing during my songs. So it just makes it really fun to record with him too, because he hears all these different lines and things.
Do you find sometimes when you play with him that he's found something in the song, like a rhythm or a style that you thought, hey, I didn't realize that was there?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, he's just great to collaborate with.
So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions about the CD, Say My Name. I know that the song itself, Say My Name, has a really great backstory to it. Can you share that with our listeners?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I had set the intention, I wanted to write a story song, you know, about somebody in history. And the first person that popped in my mind was Camille Claudel. And she was a 19th century sculptor in France. And most people would be familiar with Auguste Rodin, his sculpture, The Thinker. And so she worked with him. She was like his apprentice and his muse and turned out to be his lover for a long time. And she's probably responsible. People attribute some of the hands, you know, some of the most intricate parts of his sculptures to her. The tragedy of it all was, you know, she did work in her own right as well. But Rodin never, I guess, relinquished his relationship with this other woman that he was involved with. So after they ended, I think Camille Claudel ended their relationship, she just had a really unstable time and ended up in a mental institution. Her mother and her brother basically institutionalized her once her dad died, a couple days after her dad died. Her dad was her champion. So she spent the last 30 years of her life in a mental institution. And even though friends and some of the physicians, I think, that were working at the mental institution appealed for her freedom, her brother and her mother had the ultimate say, and they never came to say her name to release her. So she never sculpted again. The last 30 years she was in this institution, and so we lost out on all that art, and let alone, you know, she lived there. So she ended up dying there during World War II in that mental institution. So I just thought about the, you know, the tragedy of that, and the fact that Rodin got to go on and, you know, and just have all this glory for this art that he created and that she was part of and didn't really get her full say. So I just thought there was a song in there.
Yeah, that's tragic.
Yeah.
So would you say that songwriting on this album in particular is more observational, or is it more personal?
Oh boy. I would say a combination. That one is observational, but I think a lot of them are personal for sure. I think more of my songwriting is personal. Maybe that's why I wanted to challenge myself to write, you know, an observational song.
Mm-hmm.
But most of them are personal on that album.
What about Dear John or Jane?
Well, that's sort of a combination. That starts with the typewriter, and mm-hmm. So I'd have idea that I would use the typewriter as kind of a rhythmic element in my song and a song. Then I thought, well, what would I want to do with that? And I thought, well, let's do a breakup song. So that became the beginning and the end of that song. But yeah, I mean, personal in that I think all of us, and definitely me, have been in relationships where it's just not working. And so I just thought about this ill-fated image that fills that song. It's kind of part personal, part, you know, just sort of fun images, but just that sense of being in a relationship that just isn't working. You're trying to explain why, but it's just, you know, yeah, it's just not working.
So was the typewriter always the idea for the song all along? Was that sort of the inspiration for the song?
Yeah, I think the two kind of came together. Well, first I thought about the typewriter, so I was kind of typing out a rhythm, and then I was thinking, okay, if I were to, you know, the Dear John, and then I thought, or Jane, and then I just kind of tapped out that rhythm, and I think then the words sort of started to come over that. And then what I usually do is kind of a word dump, and I just sort of brainstorm just a bunch of phrases, and I just write and write. And then it's a puzzle after that, because you take those phrases and think, how can that fit back into the structure that I've created? Mm-hmm. So that's generally how it worked. And then I thought of that phrase, you know, you're a bicycle to my fish. Woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle, or whatever.
Right.
So
yeah.
That's kind of the first ill-fated image I thought of.
Wow, that's a great song.
Thank you.
And then another tune I like on the CD too is Sweet Bird. Can you tell me about that song?
Aww, I love that song. That, if I do say so. So I went through a really devastating time in my life. Went through a divorce, I'd say about 6 years ago. And I had always slept really well. My head would hit the pillow, and then the next thing I knew, the alarm was going off in the morning until this time. And I just could not sleep. And I would just lay there awake. And it was just a really awful, awful time for me. Probably the worst in my life. And I would lie there, and it was dark. And then I discovered that those birds start singing really early in the morning, and I had not really heard that in my life. And they were singing to me. So I was at this really desperate point in my life, and I would hear this simple, sweet song calling out to me. And I'm telling you, it felt like in some of those times that they were singing directly to me, and they were telling me that I could keep going. And I just wanted to write a song in gratitude for that gift, because they would sing when it was dark, you know, that whole quote about, you know, faith is whatever, it's, you know, when you sing while the dawn is still dark or whatever. And so they just gave me hope, and they would usher me into the morning, and, you know, I kind of thought, okay, I can do this next day. And so this is my song for them. And a couple of things about that, though. I wrote this song, and then my son that I was talking about, Ryan, he and I were going to play a gig, and so I started playing my picking part, and he came up with this, the line that kind of goes throughout, that I think is the sort of the bird call in that. And he recorded that on the CD, which is really a special thing. And then just recently we did a house concert outside. It was a beautiful evening, and the birds were singing and singing through this. I mean, and I hadn't really noticed them until we started playing that song, and it was just the most touching kind of thing. And at one point I stopped, they were just singing, and started again. So anyway, that's a special song to me.
Yeah, that's beautiful. It's amazing how music can do that for you, even the birds' music, you know.
Yes.
Their song as well. So another great honor you had recently was Messy Girl, was an honorable mention in the American Songwriter magazine. That must have been a big thrill for you.
Yeah. It was fantastic. I was just thrilled.
And that song, you've got a video for that on your website as well.
Mm-hmm.
That song, I think, kind of is self-described in the song. But
yes.
So were you going through a particularly messy time? Are you generally a messy person?
Yeah, good question. I think the inspiration for the song was once I was getting out my bike to go for a bike ride, and I lifted up the latch, had a minivan at the time, you know, the whole mom thing, and there was just stuff everywhere. And I just thought, man, I cannot get a grip on my house or my life or my minivan, or, you know, and I just thought everything just feels so messy. And so since then, I've sort of quote unquote cleaned up my act, I think, a little bit more, because I have a little bit more time. I think when you have really young kids, it's particularly rough. But I think it more refers now in my mind to my creative brain, which feels generally pretty messy. Ideas here and there, lyrics here and there, and projects and all that. So for me now, I think I can tend to have piles around and things like that, but it's mostly the messy creative brain that reminds me of now.
Yeah. For me, it's like I've just got piles of things over here I've got to do. I've got piles of things in my own mind, you know. It's not necessarily my home, but in my brain, it's like, I've got to segment this stuff over here and get to that later. So
yes.
I relate to that a lot.
Yeah.
So being a new songwriter, I'm sure you remember the first song you wrote then.
Yeah. That was actually from my former husband. It was about pen and paper. It was about how we first met. And that was just, I just remember the feeling, honestly, of like playing these chords and thinking, okay, I'm going to set this intention to try to write something. And so I was playing the chords, and just this melody came out over the top. And I thought, wow, it, like this magic revealed itself to me. It was just kind of, I just remember that feeling of starting down that road. And I thought, so is it once super complicated to write a song, and then sometimes it's not? Mm-hmm. So this is serious.
So did you like study theory and stuff? I mean, you have a music minor, right? So you know about theory and stuff. So probably songwriting came a little bit easier to you than probably would most people, I would guess.
Maybe so. Yeah.
So do you ever co-write?
You know, I've only co-written one song. I met another woman at that Texi conference, Jan Linder Coda. And so we were Skyping for a while and decided to write a song together. And Crazy in Need, and it's on like Gray Matter CD. It's one of my favorite songs. And so, yeah, that was my only co-write. I'm not sure why that hasn't really happened since. I just haven't really, I guess, tried to do that. I really love doing it by myself, but I think there's such value in hearing other people's input too. Mm-hmm. So that may be something down the road.
Yeah, for me as a songwriter, the reason I like to co-write sometimes is just because I need an editor. it's like as a book writer, you know, you need an editor to take out the extra words or the unnecessary things in the song. And that's the value I've always found in co-writing is kind of having an editor there to tell you, this is unnecessary. We don't need to say this, or we've already said that. I enjoy the collaboration of co-writing. I think you get a lot out of it as a writer, too.
Yeah. And you learn from the other person too. And then somebody can be maybe a little bit more objective too sometimes about, you know, some of those extra words and help you cut to the chase, you know?
For sure. So you got a new spiritual CD coming out called Lights Along the Way.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about that CD?
Yeah. Well, that one, we just wanted to go into the studio. So I do a lot of, you know, this eclectic singer-songwriter stuff that we've been talking about, but also do some spiritual songs as well. And so just thought, well, let me get some of those down. And so we went into the studio and not necessarily planning on putting them together in a CD. It turned out to really be an EP, but then they kind of were all coming together. So decided to put them together on a CD. So the first song, the title track, The Lights Along the Way, was a song that I wrote after my brain hemorrhage about 6-7 years ago, and it was I was still kind of recovering from it, and my head still hurt a lot, but I wanted to pick up my guitar. So this is what came out, and the song Lights Along the Way, and it was about sort of how I wanted to live going forward after that experience. Kind of a profound song for me. And then it ended up, it was the first time I'd won a songwriting award. It was at Winfield. It got honorable mention. And so at that festival, when you get honorable mention, the only people that play actually on the stage then are the first place. And so if you're honorable mention, you just kind of wait in wings to see if the first place person shows up. And sure enough, you know, most times that happens, obviously, but you still have to be ready. And the thing was, I wasn't quite ready at that point in my career to go out there on stage, but I just remember just standing there waiting in the wings going, I want to play, I don't want to play, I want to play, I don't want to play. And so it just reminds me of that idea of if we always wait till we're just totally ready to do something, we miss out on opportunities. And I think the whole music, songwriting, any kind of arts, lots of things in life, you know, require a lot of bravery that you just kind of, sometimes it's best if you just throw yourself in, even if you're, you know, fully ready. So that's what that song reminds me of. So that's the title track. And
yeah.
The other songs are you know, spiritual. And then Will You Stand With Me at the end is more of a rockin' track that we like a lot.
Mm-hmm. So are you would you say you're a spiritual person or a religious person? How would you categorize yourself?
I would say both, honestly. You know, grew up in a Lutheran family. And so, you know, again, those four-part hymns and, you know, and then I have probably more of a general spiritual, like I think the songs that I write are kind of more in the general spiritual category, but definitely this progressive sense of spirituality and of religion and like a wider inclusive view of God and just
they're inspirational but not preachy is what I would say.
Exactly. Yeah, hopefully uplifting and inclusive in a way that includes people that haven't necessarily always been included or thought of themselves. So, yeah, that's more where I think I'm coming from. Yeah, so this positive sense of inclusion.
And tell me when Lights Along the Way is going to be out. I know it's not out yet.
It actually is.
Oh, is it?
It just is. Yeah, it's supposed to be at CD Baby right this minute. So
yay.
It just got through this week. Yay!
So I can add it to the playlist, yay.
Excellent.
We talked before we started the interview about your workshops and retreats that you do. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So I think I mentioned before that I am a social worker, and so did that in a variety of settings and a variety of different people and things. And now I've found a way to combine the two really in my work life. And so really feel like I've hit sort of the sweet spot with that. And so get to do music programs, I would say, I guess, workshops with kids like at Children's Mercy Hospital here in town, or with people with serious and chronic illness and folks with dementia, and then just do retreats for people. And it's just great to be able to combine music, cover songs that people know, you know, that they would sing along to, but also a lot of the original songs. And you talk about, you know, where they came from and some of the ones that are, whether they're about gratitude or grief or resilience, it can be kind of a great springboard for folks to do some self-reflection and maybe some writing or talking about issues. So it's really fun to design different workshops around different themes and then think of what songs will work for that. And I've just had really great response to that combination. So it combines my biggest loves together.
That's great when you can do that. That's sort of what Casey Cafe Radio gets to do for me. I get to do broadcasting and do music at the same time.
Yes.
What kind of venues are you doing these workshops at? Are they mostly hospitals, or what kind of places are you going to?
Yeah, a combination of hospitals and then different nonprofits. Like one here in Kansas City that's called Turning Point that works with folks with serious and chronic illness. And then also the caregivers. You know, those folks need a lot of care as well. So that would be sort of a place too. Or retirement communities. You know, that sort of thing. So a variety of different places, counseling centers, different things like that.
Tell me about Sonic Joy.
Oh, yeah. So that's me playing with a band. So we ended up having sort of a loose configuration at this point. So I joined Jimmy Dykes and the Blistonians. So we'll play in that format when he arranges the gigs. And then when I do, it's Sonic Joy. And so that gives us a flexibility depending on the size of the venue and what they're needing to bring 2, 3, 4 players. So it's nice to have a different group of people that could play with us depending on the needs of the venue.
Are you doing like your material? Are you doing other people's material?
It depends. You know, there's some places that just want original stuff, and that is awesome, right? When you get to do that and try to have as much variety, you know, in my writing, I think that helps, you know, when it's just original stuff. And it's great when you do house concerts or do venues that like original stuff because, you know, people are really listening to the lyrics and everything. But it's also really fun when I do other gigs now. We're weaving in a lot more of the original stuff. I have this song called I Wish You'd Met Me When My Stomach Was Flat. And people just really get a kick out of that song. Mm-hmm. And so it's just nice when those are woven into some of these nights when we're playing, you know, like at the Intercontinental Hotel. So to get a chance to have your original stuff played there too, weaving those into cover songs. Because I do like playing covers as well, and I learn a lot from that. So it's a big variety.
What covers do you guys usually do?
Oh, man, there's just a whole bunch of them. Let's see, I sing Rolling in the Deep, Adele, Nora Jones, Don't Know Why. We do Chain of Fools, let's say a little Aretha, Valerie, Amy Winehouse. Just a whole variety of things. Do some duo stuff like Gillian Welch and Dave Rawlings, you know, and do the Way It Goes. And once in a while, that's Casey Chambers and Shane Nicholson. Kind of a whole slew of songs. And then just kind of pick them out as a audience, you know, just based on the feel.
So what do you got planned for the rest of the year?
Oh, that's a good question. Let's see, I've got, you know, a lot of gigs on the books and then some more of these workshops, always developing new ones. I've got one like The Power of Hope, and I'm trying to think what else I've got going. So just planning more of those and hopefully doing some more retreats. And we'll see, writing more songs. I haven't written so many in the last several months. I've been busy with the move, and there seems to be seasons in my life, and I have to... I kind of honor, I guess, that ebb and flow. Because sometimes when I try to force the songwriting, it doesn't work as well. But I also want to be more intentional about it. So I feel a new season coming on. I hope.
Yeah.
More. Yeah. Yeah.
And we all need a new season now and then to come around.
Yeah.
Well, Joy, I want to thank you so much for chatting with me today here on Casey Cafe Radio.
Thank you so much, Kathy. And thanks for all you do for this station. It's such a great support to all of us songwriters. So can't thank you enough.
Let our listeners know where they can find your music.
Okay, so I've got a website, joyzimmermanmusic.com. And then all my CDs can be clicked on there. But CD Baby has all of them as well.
And you also have a couple of videos on your website as well on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some live stuff and then some that we've done. Yeah. Dear John or Jane and some other ones. Yeah.
Joy Zimmerman, and check her out at joyzimmermanmusic.com. And you can always find her music on CD Baby as well. I highly recommend you check her out and get a couple of her CDs and listen to her on Casey Cafe Radio and request her music, because she's a great singer-songwriter that is a really great person as well.
Thank you, Kathy. Thanks.